Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. I hope that our Wi-Fi is strong enough here. I'm in a hotel up in Federal Way. I apologize if there was any dead air Friday. I got a message late about Barry having an emergency with his family, so I wasn't able to jump on the air. I actually do not have a guest this morning. If you want to give me a call, you can. The phone number is 718-717-8106. If any of you are connected to me on Skype, it's Lonnie.Clark7. And I thought what I'd do today is just talk to you again about this HR 5035 and the work that Donna Gilmore is doing. She has us in the loop on, she goes back and forth with the people that are working inside the nuclear industry. And one of the things that's happening is in San Diego, they're actually talking about putting up new reactors, these new small nuclear reactors. And they are also talking about keeping the storage waste on site at San Onofre in perpetuity because they don't have a place to send it. So one of the things Donna Gilmore is talking to these people about is that their plans. She sent me an email, a copy of an email to Ted, a guy named Ted, who is working inside the nuclear, Ted Quinn, and they are talking about these new plans to put these nuclear reactors in. Let me just get to this thing because this is really amazing. And this Donna Gilmore is talking about in this article in the San Diego Tribune. She's asking this man, Ted, if he was quoted accurately in the article that he supports new nuclear reactors, because she strongly is against the nuclear reactors. She says, I suggest the Tribune give us ongoing updates on what's happening at Fukushima in Japan. That's so naive. Nobody's going to give us ongoing updates of what's going on in Fukushima, Japan, because they don't want us to know. We're on a need-to-know basis, folks. They're not going to tell us. With three ongoing nuclear reactor meltdowns, people need to be reminded that the nuclear industry has no plan for failure. Bluefin tuna caught in San Diego were found to have cesium-134 from Japan. And we're talking 100%, folks. 100% of the tuna. It all gets locked in there. And people need to know, each thin-wall stainless steel canister at San Onofre contains about as much lethal radioactive cesium-137 and other radionuclides as was released from the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. People need to understand this. These thin-wall canisters that we are storing our waste in, when they say they're leaking, it's not just like it's leaking oil. They seem to think that we're talking about like automobiles or something. It's completely outrageous. And Edison has no approved plan to deal with the leaking and potentially exploding canisters. The president of Holtec admitted at an Edison meeting that even a microscopic through wall crack will release millions of curies of radionuclides into the environment, and it's not feasible to repair cracks in canisters loaded with this highly radioactive waste. And she says you can see details at sanonofrisafety.org. Promises to move this waste do not address these issues. NRC safety regs do not allow transport of even partially cracked canisters. And that's actually part of what HR 503053 wants to do. It wants to eliminate the need to have safety impact reports for these transporting these canisters, whether they're cracked or not. And the NRC admits no canister has been inspected for cracks since they have no method to find cracks in canisters filled with radioactive waste. Do you hear that? No canister has been inspected for cracks since they have no method to find cracks in canisters filled with radioactive waste. Let me repeat that a third time so it sinks in. The NRC admits no canister, not just the ones at San Onofre, but no canister has been inspected for cracks since they have no method to find cracks in canisters filled with radioactive waste. The NRC is still studying whether train vibrations will cause the high burn-up fuel assemblies in these canisters to become damaged. That's for real. They're still studying it. They've had 20 years, and they're still studying it. The NRC is still studying whether train vibrations will cause high burn-up fuel assemblies in these canisters to become damaged. They're still studying it, and HR 503053, which might come up soon, they want to be able to just transport any waste on any canister anywhere and not tell anybody. And if that bill passes, folks, you will not have a right to object because the federal government has lost all of its air rights, all of its water rights. That's so outrageous. Recommending more nuclear power and more nuclear waste by ignoring these realities is unsubstantiated hope and ignores the substantial proof nuclear power is a bad idea. Those claiming we need it may not know these nuclear plants are keeping renewable energy from coming online. Really, Donna, this is what I mean. They do know exactly what they're doing. These inflexible plants are not designed to be easily turned off and are not designed to reduce fuel output. This is so outrageous that we just allow this to happen. Nuclear waste is not safely stored in the United States. Solve that problem rather than wasting time, money, and talent creating more lethal radioactive waste. Most of the world uses thick wall cast that can be inspected, repaired, maintained, and monitored to prevent leaks. They house them in buildings for additional environmental and security protection. Edison refused to require these basic requirements in their bid for waste storage containers. They just refused to require it. You wouldn't buy a car that didn't meet these basic safety standard requirements. Wow. I mean, Donna is talking to people inside the industry and attempting to get them to crack. This just stuns me. The people hear this and they just don't go. There's two more paragraphs. Hold on. Edison need to stop their plans for more thin wall canisters and deal with the 51 canisters they may have already started to crack. There is no seismic grading for even partially cracked canisters. Thick casts don't have all these problems. Thin canisters are only 1/2 to 5/8 inch thick. Thick casts are 10 inches to 19 3/4 inch thick. It's just common sense. You don't need to be a nuclear engineer to understand this. And that's where she ends it. So I will go up and read to you this story in the Tribune, what she's responding to. So the title is More Setbacks for Nuclear Industry. It was dated when? August 3rd, 2017. That was, by the way, the date of birth of my grandson. Yay! My daughter gave birth on August 3rd. So this is by, let's read this again. More Setbacks for Nuclear Power Industry by Rob Nikolowski, contact reporter at on August 3rd, 5:10. The nuclear industry has had a bad week. On Monday, contractors in South Carolina announced they are stopping work on two new reactors in VC Summer Nuclear Plant, saying cost estimates came to more than $20 billion, almost twice what was expected. Some $9 billion has already been spent on the project since 2008. Then on Wednesday, developers at another nuclear project in the South, the Vogtle Electric Generating Plant in Georgia, announced costs had swelled from $14 billion to more than $25 billion and predicted completion will be delayed another 18 months. Oh my gosh. The two announcements come at a particularly bad time for the industry. Why? Because they can't suck more money out of us? I am not kidding. $9 billion on one plant, $25 billion on another plant, and they're just going to close shop. And how many people? The people of Flint, Michigan are still drinking nasty water and being evicted because we say we can't afford them, afford to help them. This is bull. The two announcements come at a particularly bad time for the industry. The murder industry, you mean? No nuclear power plants have been built in the United States for 30 years, thank God. The nation's fleet of 99 reactors is getting older, and the 10 existing plants have announced plans to shut down in the coming years, including Diablo Canyon, the last remaining nuclear power plant in California. Thank God for this. And earlier this year, Westinghouse Electric Company, long considered a leader in nuclear power development, filed for bankruptcy protection. Then there's the nuclear's problem when it comes to competing with natural gas. Driven by developments in hydraulic fracking and horizontal drilling techniques, oil and gas producers in sites such as Marcellus Shale Formation have dramatically increased the amounts of natural gas across the United States. The abundance has driven prices and have driven down prices, and utilities have increasingly turned to natural gas as an alternative to nuclear, as well as coal. I think what's happening is the operating plants is the price of natural gas fell to levels that no one ever predicted, says Jay Silberg, a nuclear energy lawyer and partner at the Washington, D.C. firm Pillsbury Winthrop. So this guy's the enemy, I think. He's a real enemy. Nuclear energy lawyer. What the heck does that mean? Nuclear energy lawyer. Ugh. Another factor is the increasing amount of renewable energy on the grid. It doesn't surprise me at all that these plants are getting canceled, says Rochelle Baker, a longtime critic of the nuclear power and the executive director for the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility based in San Luis Obispo. Hang on. They're like very expensive dominoes that are falling. With the price of natural gas and the availability of renewable and new resources that are continuing to hit the market, nuclear is pretty much dead in this country. According to the most recent numbers by the California Energy Commission, renewable energy made up 27% of in-state generation of electricity in 2016, almost twice as much as in 2009. In addition, California is one of 28 states that have reinstituted the Renewable Portfolio Standards, and that's an acronym, RPS, mandating utilities to include increasing amounts of clean energy sources such as wind and solar into their grids. The most recent iteration of California's RPS calls for the state to derive 50% of its electricity from sources that do not emit carbon by 2030. And there's a bill in the legislature this session that would target, that would take the target all the way to 100% by 2045. That just feels like so far away, doesn't it, you guys? 2045. I mean, I even wonder if we're going to have life on this planet by 2045. Back to the story. Like most states, California does not classify nuclear as part of its clean energy portfolio. Another stumbling block is the radioactive waste that accompanies nuclear power plants. Even though the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station, and they called it Songs, how sweet of them, has not produced electricity for more than 5 years, 3.55 million pounds, 3.5 million pounds of spent nuclear fuel remains at the plant within sight of the Pacific Ocean. So if we have a big, gigantic earthquake in California, what's going to happen to that 3.55 million pounds of spent nuclear fuel? Wow. As seen at nuclear sites across the country, Songs has been stranded because the federal government has not fulfilled its promise to complete a storage facility where nuclear waste can be deposited. But nuclear energy still has its supporters. The projects in Georgia and South Carolina each adopted an advanced reactor design called AP1000, developed by Westinghouse. These people make me so angry. While the design has its share of critics, the former president of the American Nuclear Society defended it. The AP1000 is an excellent technology, said Ted Quinn. So that's who she was writing. She actually wrote Ted Quinn. Huh. Wow. The AP1000 is an excellent technology, said Ted Quinn, who runs the consultancy point based in a consultancy based in Dana Point. In the area of technology, we're good. In the area of construction practices, it's a combination of the workforce and the type of contracts that are written. We're challenged in that area. Is this guy off of his rocker? And Donna tries to be rational with this man? It's unbelievable. Quinn and others say nuclear energy needs to be retained because of its ability to ensure a reliable base load. Quinn and others say nuclear energy needs to be retained because of its ability to ensure reliable baseload power for the grid, and say the industry's ability to generate large amounts of energy without emitting greenhouse gases makes it essential to reach targets to reduce global warming. What about all the nuclear waste they are creating that doesn't harm global warming? Without an aggressive build-out of nuclear power, climate goals are still available and attainable, but at much greater expenses, Jeffrey Sachs, director of the Sustainable Development Solutions Network. We'd make a big mistake right now if we decided we don't need it, meaning nuclear power. Wow. Sustainable Development Solutions Network. That sounds like an environmental group, isn't it? That's amazing. A report from Environmental Progress, a pro-nuclear environmental group. That's an oxymoron. You can't be pro-nuclear and an environmental group. That's a complete lie. A pro-nuclear environmental group based in Berkeley. It's called the Environmental Progress. Sorry, I'm adding in my 2 cents too much here, folks. A report from the Environmental Progress, a pro-nuclear environmental group based in Berkeley, said California's power sector emissions are 2.5 times higher today than they would have been had the state kept open and built planned nuclear plants. Wow. These people just talk themselves into circles without even talking about the waste, don't they? This makes me angry. Before Songs was shut down, nuclear power accounted for 18% of California's in-state generation. Since it has been closed, the figure dropped to 9%, with Diablo Canyon as the only nuclear plant left while natural gas and renewables have gone up. The Brattle Group, an international consulting company, came out with a study in December 2016 that said premature retirements of nuclear plants would increase greenhouse gas emissions because its research showed that reductions have made today have more impact than those made in the future. Since CO2 emissions persist for many years in the atmosphere, near-term emission reductions are more helpful for climate protection than later ones. Thus, preserving existing nuclear plants will improve the effectiveness of any climate policy approach by holding down cumulative emissions. That's what the study said. Wow. But Becker said nuclear's waste issues a blunt, excuse me, but Becker says nuclear's waste issues blunt that argument. Now that's an awkward statement. He's trying to say, what about the waste, folks? For 60 years, we've been unable to find a solution to the waste. And this is one of my pet peeves. It's so much more than just waste. It's poison. For 60 years, we have been unable to find a solution to the waste that's left behind at these nuclear plants. What you have is very expensive back-end costs. In fact, back-end costs can be as large as the front-end costs. That means building it. And that's right, cradle to grave. The nuclear industry sees promise in a new generation of plants, including small modular reactors that take up a fraction of the space of current facilities and can be used in a multitude of locations, including remote sites. That's so outrageous. Hang on just one second. Sorry about that, folks. This is so unbelievable that people are actually talking about this as if these small nuclear reactors are an answer. And they don't take up the same amount of space. They do just as much damage. San Diego-based General Atomics has been working on what's called the Energy Multiplier Module, but no SMRs are online yet. General Atomics hopes to have its project ready in 2030. Internationally, the forecast has been mixed. Wow. Russia and China are building nuclear projects, with China expected to complete 5 new plants in this year alone. But Germany swore off nuclear power after the Fukushima disaster, and two countries that have embraced nuclear in the past may be making an about-face. The environmental minister in France said last month the country may close up to 17 reactors to reduce its reliance on nuclear power and boost its amount of renewable energy, while South Korea just elected a new president who promised to de-emphasize nuclear power. We will abolish our nuclear-centered energy policy and move toward a nuclear-free era, said Moon Jae-in in June. For its critics, nuclear is becoming yesterday's news. Really? It's not really, is it, folks? It's a good way to underemphasize it. The future is not big baseload plants, Becker said. It's distributed generation and renewable and other energy that is on the table that we haven't even talked about. But its supporters see a brighter future, even if the present is problematic. I don't think we'll see large nuclear power plants in the future, Silberg said. We may see SMRs if they, in fact, get designed and licensed. But I don't think at this point in the next 15 or 20 years, utility management is going to want to invest very much in large nuclear plant projects, unless, of course, natural gas prices go back up and the industry figures out somehow to overcome the problems that showed up at Vogtle and Summer. Is that the end of the story? That's an odd way to end the story. Huh. That's the San Diego Union Tribune. So more setbacks for the nuclear industry, folks. That's called the setback. So these are the names of the enemies, man. Jay Silberg, nuclear energy attorney and partner at the D.C. law firm of Pillsbury Winthrop. Nuclear energy proponent. So this is what Mr. Ted wrote back when she wrote to Ted Quinn. He said, I accurately quoted in the San Diego Tribune this and many other times I have written editorials for them. I have represented the San Diego American Nuclear Society section since the inception of SONG-CEP. And as a nuclear engineer of 41 years, past president of the American Nuclear Society, and the instructor of the MIT Reactor Safety Course for over 15 years, I do support nuclear science and technology, including nuclear energy that powers 99 of our plants in the U.S. and many others around the world. My goal since its inception of the CEP has been to provide unbiased facts to counter false and biased testimony or input to CEP, which is counter to the best interests of the citizens local to San Onofre, where I have lived for over 35 years and was an original builder of SONGS. Wow. So this is what you get back when you try to talk reasonably to a nuclear proponent, man. And then will they even discuss any of this? Let's see if this has been updated. Do they even discuss the mass animal deaths or the fact that nuclear energy is what? They're just going to completely deny that nuclear energy causes any kind of problems at all whatsoever with the environment. That's the thing that really gets me. It's just the idea that this nuclear waste has no effect on our environment whatsoever. And I don't know what life is like where most of you who are listening is, but living here on the West Coast, this weekend to me was the first time we have had a real wake-up call about the environment. We have been getting pummeled, and I mean horribly pummeled with chemtrails for the last month. When I drove up here, I drove in the day, and it looked like I was driving in the fog. The thick smoke, they said that British Columbia is having a huge forest fire, and it's that smoke that is making the entire West Coast smoggy. That's a big forest fire. I can't help but think it has something to do with the chemtrails. The air is odd. There's even a air warning not to go out and exert yourself, not to be out. It's thick. It looks like it's fog. It's like this gray, I don't know, very thick smog like you've seen in those pictures of China or Beijing, right, where everybody wears a mask because it's so polluted. So it's really unconscionable what we are doing to our planet. And what's even worse unconscionable is that people are acting like it's not really that big of a deal. So I thought what I'd do here is talk to you about how a nuclear meltdown works. Because people don't even understand what that means. Radioactive materials are used in a nuclear power plant just as coal, gas, or oil are used in a conventional plant as a heat source. Huge amounts of radioactive material are made to go through a chain reaction, a process in which atomic particles bombard the nuclei of atoms, causing them to break up and generate heat. The heat boils water, the steam turns the turbine, and the electricity is produced. But to keep the nuclear reaction in check, to prevent the material from overheating, vast amounts of coolant are required. Listen to this. Up to 1 million gallons of water a minute in most common nuclear plants being built today. 1 million gallons a minute. And we wonder what has happened to our water. This is why nuclear plants are sited along rivers and bays to use the water as a coolant. If the water which cools the reactor core is its 200 or 300,000 pounds of radioactive fuel load stops flowing completely and a pipe ruptures or a break in the reactor vessel could do that, there is only 15 to 30 seconds for the emergency core cooling system to send water in. This loss of coolant accident is called, this is called a loss of cooling accident, or LOCA. That's their term for it, LOCA, L-O-C-A, loss of cooling accident, LOCA. We have a LOCA going on here. Wow. If the emergency system, which has failed in many tests, fails to operate within 15 to 30 seconds, an unstoppable meltdown results. This is so outrageous. It is the critical time period from about 15 seconds after the rupture to 30 seconds that control of the accident must be gained by ECC operations and fuel temperature excursions halted. The greatest importance is attached to the need for having an adequate cooling water flow upward through the core in this period. If the vertical flooding rate once emergency coolant reaches the core bottom, it is below some critical value, presently believed to be in the vicinity of 0.17 inches per second, then the accident will proceed out of control. That comes right out of the NRC, folks. And I am reading Carl Grossman's book, What They Do Not Want You to Know About Nuclear Power. And yet, here's a man who's saying that he's a big proponent of nuclear energy. They call it waste, but it's not waste. The core of a nuclear fuel, now 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, burns through the cement bottom of the nuclear plant and bores through the earth. This is what scientists have dubbed the China syndrome. The white hot core doesn't go to China, however, but to the water table underlying the plant. Then, in a violent reaction, the molten core and the water combine, creating steam explosions which can breach the containment and release 1,000 more radioactivity than the Hiroshima A-bomb. The A-bomb. Wow. There are other kinds of nuclear plant accidents, including a nuclear runaway accident, which is even worse than a meltdown because an instant explosion occurs. That's what we saw at Fukushima. We will provide details on all types of accidents, those that can happen and those that have already happened, although the public has, for most part, not been informed. And that purportedly mysterious hydrogen bubble at Three Mile Island was no isolated incident. Eruptions of hydrogen gas as a first reaction in the partial loss of coolant accident has been discussed fearfully in government and nuclear industry literature for decades. That is because a highly volatile substance called zirconium was chosen as the major material for the rods into which the radioactive fuel is loaded. There are 30,000 to 40,000 rods composed of 20 tons of zirconium to an average reactor. Many other substances were tried first, particularly stainless steel, but only zirconium worked well. Zirconium is used because it allows neutrons from the fuel pellets in the rods to pass freely between the rods and to sustain a chain reaction. But zirconium has the great advantage that it is highly volatile. But zirconium has the great disadvantage that it is highly volatile, and when hot, will explode spontaneously upon contact with the air, water, or steam. Oh, that's really great. That's really great. Zirconium dust in the air will explode instantly, for which reason a speck of it is used in a flashbulb, its main use. It will not erupt spontaneously in solid form except with heat. But it is heat that builds up, a great deal of heat in a nuclear reactor. Zirconium, with the explosive power, pound for pound of zirconium, with the explosive power pound for pound of nitroglycerin catches fire and the potential to explode at temperatures of 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, well below the 5,000 degree temperature of a meltdown. Wow. So it could just blow up at 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. I can't believe that anybody would be willing to do this to our planet. Before that, zirconium reacts to the heat by drawing oxygen from the water and steam and letting off hydrogen, which itself can explode as well as further block coolant. And in its formation, even more heat is developed, bringing zirconium closer and closer to its explosive level. The hydrogen bubble at Three Mile Island was no mystery, but precisely what was and is expected in a partial loss of coolant accident. I guess we call that a partial LOCA, huh? Loss of coolant accident. The cause for worry has been what is described in nuclear accident studies as a zirconium metal water reaction, a reaction that can easily trigger a meltdown or a full-scale nuclear runaway. Wow. This is stunning, folks. I want to keep reading Carl's book. This is Carl's book, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power. You can get it on carlgrossman.com. Click under books, and you can get a free copy. It says sample, but it's not a sample. It's a 300-page book that you can get. So Carl goes on to this. It says, what is plutonium and how does that come into the picture? I want to continue to read this because most of us know that plutonium is bad, very bad, but let's read how really horrible it is. Plutonium is the most potent radioactive substance in a nuclear plant in any phase of a nuclear cycle. The plutonium is what makes Hanford the worst. They used to have plutonium power plants sitting right on the Columbia River. It took them many years to move it backwards. You know, they moved the plants further in off when they realized it was poisoning the river. Now, did we unpoison the river? No. We just have a lot of, really bad things happening in the river that nobody wants to talk about, like highly radioactive fish. No salmon in the Columbia River. There's no salmon, folks. So let's get back to this book by Carl Grossman, because if anybody wants to know anything about how a reactor works, how the nuclear really, really industry really works, read this book. This is, I guess, what Ted Quinn would call propaganda or untrue statements, because he doesn't want to have to listen to it. Plutonium is the most potent radioactive substance in a nuclear plant in any phase of the nuclear cycle. It is an element developed at the dawn of World War II for use in atomic bombs. It is the most toxic substance in the universe. It has the appropriate name of Pluto, god of hell. One of its discoverers described it as having a fiendishly toxic power. It does not normally occur in nature, but is a byproduct of uranium fission. A pound of plutonium released as airborne dust has the potential to cause fatal lung cancer in 9 billion people, over twice the population of the Earth today. Now, this book was written, I think, in the early 70s. An ounce, only a tablespoonful, no, it wasn't the 70s, 90. Sorry about that. An ounce, only a tablespoonful, because plutonium is very heavy, can kill 200 million people. A millionth of a gram of plutonium will cause cancer. A millionth of a gram of plutonium. An ounce, a tablespoon is an ounce. Wow. 200 million people. I don't know if that sunk into you, but can you imagine? And we're producing this stuff everywhere. An average nuclear power plant produces 400 to 500 pounds of plutonium yearly as a waste product. The amount of plutonium in its nuclear core at any time during its operation depends on the plant's nuclear depends on the plant's age of the core. It can be up to 1,000 pounds of plutonium. The amount varies because periodically reactors are refueled. Older fuel rods, heavy with plutonium and other radioactive waste, are taken out and new rods put in. Plutonium has its own power. The strategy of those in nuclear power business is to use this plutonium waste with high-grade uranium as high-grade uranium runs out in coming years for fuel in nuclear plants. Wow. This makes me so angry. They know exactly what they were doing. This book was written, I believe, in 1990, as a matter of a fact. Let me see if I can find it very quickly. Hold on. I'm going to go back to it and I'll read where we were. This is so completely outrageous. I mean, I just can't believe that they're pursuing this. That they think, knowing these facts, an ounce can kill 200 million people and they're continuing to produce it. An average nuclear power plant produces 400 to 500 pounds of plutonium yearly as a waste product. The amount of plutonium in a plant's nuclear core at any time during its operation depends on the age of the core. It can be up to 1,000 pounds of plutonium. The amount varies because periodically reactors are refueled. Older fuel rods, heavy with plutonium and other radioactive waste, are taken out and new rods put in. Plutonium has power of its own. The strategy of those in the nuclear power industry business is to use this plutonium waste as high-grade uranium runs out in the coming years for fuel in nuclear plants. Breeder reactors are being built, which not only utilize plutonium as a fuel, but produce even more plutonium waste than conventional reactors. They breed the stuff, which can then be reused as fuel. This kind of perpetual motion theory using plutonium is called by those in the nuclear industry the plutonium economy, endless energy, except, and there are exceptions, a large breeder reactor contains 7 tons of plutonium, which dispersed in a single catastrophic event would spread enough of the most toxic radioactive substance in the cosmos to kill every person in the world 42,000 times over. The super concentrated radioactive poison stays in the environment for 500,000 years. Plutonium breeders are even more unstable than regular nuclear power plants. We almost lost Detroit is the true story of what... is the true story of what almost happened when the Fermi breeder near Detroit went into an accident in 1966, the city narrowly avoiding the catastrophe. In a breeder, liquid sodium is used as a coolant, not water. Liquid sodium will explode and burn on contact with water or air. A pinhole liquid sodium leak in a breeder can lead to a rapid disaster. A breeder can explode like a small atomic bomb, shattering its concrete containment as if it were an eggshell and unleashing all radioactive materials inside, including the vast tonnage of lethal plutonium. We nuclear people have, listen to this, I've read this many times on my show. We nuclear people have made a Faustian bargain with society, unquote, said one leading plutonium breeder advocate, Alvin Weinberg, in 1972. Dr. Weinberg, former director of the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, one of the several U.S. national laboratories which serve as taxpayer-supported research and development facilities for the nuclear industry, speaks of a nuclear priesthood in charge. With a plutonium breeder, one single accident spells doomsday, and the issues involved are primarily not scientific or technical, but moral and ethical, as the U.S. National Council of Churches declared in 1976. quote, the resolution on the plutonium economy, unquote. Quote, we are talking literally about the future of humanity, said the council. We are charged by God to be caretakers of the creation, it declared, and called for a stop in the continuing development of plutonium use, during which society can determine its options and decide responsibly on the avenues it wishes to follow before irreversible commitments have been made. Well, folks, we have made irreversible commitments. That has already happened. That's already there. This is just an unconscionable industry. And here's Carl, true to form, taking us where the logic brings us. If nuclear plants are so dangerous, why push to build them? It began in the scramble at the end of World War II among the nuclear scientists in the U.S. who had worked making atomic bombs in the Manhattan Project. The war was over, and although many were able to keep on making atomic weapons, what about the rest? 2 decades later, the aerospace engineers of America faced a similar threat of unemployment when the U.S. cooled on rocket ships. These nuclear men joined forces with their bureaucratic government counterparts in 1946 and created the Atomic Energy Commission, which slickly, with a lot of public relations, media hoodwinking, developed and as a matter of wartime censorship, the Manhattan Project, pushed a scheme called Atoms for Peace. The U.S. military encouraged and supported the effort because it saw that wide activity of in the field served its own interests. Plutonium made for power plants could be used for bombs, too. And a commercial nuclear program would help justify and shield huge military nuclear expenditures. It could be a joint operation. Also, in American production of nuclear weaponry, nuclear weaponry was principally contracted out by the government to large corporations, which wanted to see their nuclear business now expand in every possible way. But the electric utilities, traditionally conservative institutions, wanted nothing of it. They pointed to their liability in the event of nuclear accidents, demanded, who would pay for the damage to property, for injury and death? Insurance companies wouldn't accept the responsibility. The catastrophe hazard is apparently many times as great as anything previously known in industry, said Hubert W. Yount, then vice president of Liberty Mutual Insurance, who testified before the Congressional Joint Committee on Atomic Energy. We have heard estimates of catastrophe potential under the worst possible circumstances, running out not merely into millions or tens of millions, but into hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. It is a reasonable question of public policy as to whether a hazard of this magnitude should be permitted. Obviously, there is no principle of insurance which can be applied to a single location where the potential loss approached such astronomical proportions. Even if insurance could be found, there is a serious question whether the amount of damage to persons and property would be worth the possible benefit accruing from atomic development. And I think we've seen that answer. The answer is clearly no, but they're bludgeoning us with it anyways. The nuclear establishment of government scientists and bureaucrats then threatened the utilities. If you don't build nuclear power plants, they said, the government will. And indeed, at Shippingport, Pennsylvania, Admiral Hyman Rickover, who, by the way, if you guys don't know who he is a complete lunatic. If you ever see his face, his eyes bug out of his head. I mean, this guy is a true psycho. And indeed, at Shippingport, Pennsylvania, Admiral Hyman Rickover, with government funding and manpower, began building the nation's first civilian nuclear reactor. Government literature on nuclear power began referring to the, quote, government-controlled sites for electric generation, unquote. If we build them, the intimidated utilities then asked, What about the legal liability if and when a nuclear plant erupts? To cover this, the nuclear lobby arranged for the U.S. Congress, which remains malleable to its desires, to pass the Price-Anderson Act. It limited liability for a nuclear plant accident. No matter how many people are killed or injured or how many billions are lost, to $560 million, with the government picking up the first $500 million. I think that's increased, but not much more. That's why there is the nuclear clause on insurance policies in America. This is why if you're near a nuclear reactor, nobody can ever, ever sue you. So he gives us a copy of the nuclear, the Price-Anderson Act, which here is the Price-Anderson Act, which became Section E of the Atomic Energy Act, which I will spare us. We only have 10 minutes, but it is a shock that anybody in our government even considered doing this. And it was at the hands of this guy, Rickover. He was a complete lunatic. He is the guy who sent people over to the Marshall Islands and experimented on animals and human beings. I don't know if he's still alive, but he certainly was a menace to the planet. So we have about 10 minutes left, folks. I want to thank you for hanging in there with us. We have a new format now. I will be on Monday through Thursday. Barry Prince is going to come in on Fridays. And I think we're going to be sticking with that pretty regularly. So we really appreciate you sharing our station. This idea about nuclear power and the way they use these words, we have got to take the language back. It's not waste. It's poison. It's not waste. Waste means something that can be regenerated. I guess if you consider it'll be regenerated in 500,000 years, maybe. But this is not waste. It's not like, oh, we're just going to flush it down the toilet or throw it in the trash can. This is poison. This is the largest contaminant that there has ever been on the planet. And every single nuclear facility builds 1,000 Chernobyls every year. They store in their casks every year 1,000 Chernobyls every year. We have a nuclear catastrophe that is raging out of control. And we have something coming up, HR 3053. This is the thing. We can't figure out when it's going to come to the floor. We hear it soon. But if it does, we really do need, we must demand that our elected officials say no to this. And everybody that's living in a state where there is a, where there's a Republican, because those are the people that are controlling the House and they're controlling the Senate. And it does matter. Look what happened with the health care law. They thought they were just going to slam it down. But so many people were so concerned, they actually met these people at their offices and said, hey, we want our crappy health care. Don't take away our Obamacare, which we complained about for the last 8 years. But don't take it away. This is how confused Americans are. And will anybody stand up about these millions of tons of nuclear waste sitting all around them? No. And when their children get sick, are they going to say anything about it? No. I follow a YouTube vlog of this family that had three triplets and a little girl in Canada called the Baby Gang. They posted a video that one of their little kids has, I think it's called lymphoma, which is a form of cancer. Now, their children are small. 2 years old, 3 years old. They've been doing this for a couple of years, I guess, since they were little tiny kids. But they feed them tuna. I mean, honestly, I have made comments on that. They literally feed their children tuna regularly. I'm just stunned that anybody would feed their children tuna. 100% of the tuna have been tested positive for cesium-134 from Fukushima. That's a reality. They stopped testing, folks. This stuff is getting serious. It's very important that we actively engage. It really is up to us. It really, really is up to us. And there's only one way that we can do it, and that's for us to decide we're going to take action. And whatever action that is, and excuse me, and I, you know, it's not, it's not optional. We don't really have an option. And I get the sense that a lot of people don't get actively engaged because they believe that it's a waste of time, because really we're already so late. But let me read from this book. So this is a reading from the Book of Changes. It's the I Ching. And this is the original, the I Ching, or the Book of Changes, by Wilhelm M. Binds. And I opened it up and it's to decrease, okay? Decrease combined with sincerity brings supreme good fortune without blame. One may be persevering in this. It furthers one to undertake something. How is it to be carried out? One may use two small bowls for sacrifice. So this is what we need to change our mentality to. Decrease does not under all circumstances mean something bad. Increase and decrease come in their own time. What matters here is to understand the time and not to try to cover up poverty with empty pretense. If a time of scanty resources brings out an inner truth, one must not feel ashamed of simplicity. For simplicity is then the very thing needed to provide inner strength for further undertakings. Let's see. Beg your pardon, I'm trying to read the time. I want to finish reading this. So this is where we're at. Indeed, there is no need for concern if the outward beauty of the civilization, there need be no concern if the outward beauty of the civilization, even the elaboration of religious forms, should have to suffer because of simplicity. One must draw on the strength of the inner attitude to compensate for what is lacking in externals. Then the power of the content makes up for the simplicity of the form. There is no need of pretending false appearances to God. Even with slender means, the sentiment of the heart can be expressed. Look, this is where we need to go. We must learn to simplify. And the whole idea behind this nuclear power is the thirst for more and more and more while we're increasing poverty. I just did I randomly opened up the Book of Changes. It's, I guess, I can't even explain what the Book of Changes is in 2 minutes, so I'm not going to even try. So let's, I think one of the kind of general theme of this show today has been about, we really must put pressure on our elected officials to walk away from nuclear power and nuclear everything. Plutonium is a disaster in the waiting. We cannot protect it for tens of thousands of years. See how much time we've got. We've got a minute left, folks. I want to thank you for listening to us today. This book by Carl Grossman, by the way, is written in 1982, and he updated it. He has like a prologue now of 30 pages in 2011 after the Fukushima disaster. They republished it because they felt it was important. It's been almost 7 years since Fukushima happened, and the world is continuing to ignore it. While we have dead whales and dead animals and sick babies all over the place. I'll be back in Eugene tomorrow. Put your courage feet on. Take some action. Listen to your gut and do something. Take action. Move your life around so that we can save our planet. Put your courage feet on. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. My name.